as we totally took for granted, and now we need to focus on this. And then, in November 30th, 2022, ChatGPT gets released. And what do we see? We see massive amounts of capital investment by data centers and vertically integrated what we call hyperscalers like Google and Meta and Microsoft, who are investing in data centers using GPUs, which use 10 times as much energy as a CPU data center. And what they're finding is there's not enough power in this country now. We don't have enough electrons. And they need the power, and they're willing to get it anywhere, but they also want to balance at the electrons' energy reliability with also energy cleanliness. So if you zoom in and see at the intersection of those two, we're looking at reliability and cleanliness is like nuclear, geothermal, right? These are the two big areas where I see growth, huge growth opportunities in the United States. And this is where you're seeing the capital go right now. So moving forward, keep your eye on nuclear and geothermal in the United States. This is a renaissance in both of these two industries.
He's a professor at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business, Sean Hyatt. Sean, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Sidewinder, Nirvana, and Sting.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
Hi, this is Frank with a PH and a hard C. Your basic average all-American Jewish lesbian folk singer coming out to you on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
Lie down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
Good morning, this is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. If you ever want to donate, you can donate by going to KBOO's website and click on the donate button. Today, I will be interviewing John Griffiths, who is the typical host of Disability Justice. I am Dina Wilder, the editor of this program, and John and I have been working on this program for 5 to 6 years. What are you wanting to talk about today?
So, my name is John Griffiths. My pronouns are it's. My race is non-human. My sexuality is attracted to a femme. And the reason why I was getting on today is because of the inaccessibility of all the social systems that a person with a disability has to interact with.
We've got a lot to unpack there. You talked to me about something specific that's happened recently, an inaccessible part of the system that you've been dealing with. Do you want to share a little bit about what you're going through?
Well, yes. So there are many things within the system that are inaccessible, but one of the things I'm going through is an exceptions request. I had asked for an exceptions to help me out with a certain problem, and that's what the state tells you to do. If you have a problem or you need some kind of accommodation or change or something like that, ask for an exception. And when I did ask for an exceptions request, of course, it was denied. And I've been asking at least three different times and put a lot of effort into figuring out exactly how to ask, because the state doesn't give us like any examples when asking for an exceptions. They don't really show us the way in any way, shape, or form. They just somehow expect us to know the way. And we don't know the way. And more often than not, they say no.
You've been having to go from one level to another. Like, you're now going into an administrative court because that you've had these denials. Have there been inaccessible pieces of the administrative court?
Oh, the whole administrative court process is completely inaccessible. They don't give you any real representation, so nobody's really on your side. I mean, your PA can help you be out with what you might say and stuff like that, and a few things like that. But the PA is, by contract, not allowed to assist you in the administrative court. They can't stand up with you and represent you in any way, shape, or form. This is where I ran into a great deal of problems, because they have administrative rules that are like 700 pages, but I cannot run through 700 pages when I have problems with reading or writing, and trying to figure out, you know, hey, what if this is relevant to my case? What if this is not relevant to my case? This isn't just me and my particular case in any way, shape, or form. This is for all the clients that are out there who have ever had to go through this. This particular situation also applies to all of them as well. Their PAs cannot help them out, but neither can their case managers. Those PAs and case managers cannot stand up with those clients that are going through the administrative court hearing. This is where most people give up, because it is so overly complicated. You better hope you're really good at being on the internet and doing research. You better hope that you're really good at phone calls and organization. And
yeah. So you've had some help from your PA on this, kind of on the sidelines. And for listeners, I just want to let them know that PA stands for personal agent, which is a case manager for someone who has developmental disabilities and uses what are called brokerage services. Folks can either get services through county or through brokerage services. So you got some help from your PA on the sidelines, but actual representation during these administrative court meetings, they're not allowed to speak for you in any way, shape, or form.
The administrative court people will say, well, reach out to Legal Aid or reach out to Disabled Rights of Oregon. I did that. I went through it and really talked to those people. Disabled Rights of Oregon is not at this time taking on in any administrative court hearings. So there's literally no way of getting help. Don't count on DRO to help you out.
What will they help out with?
They will help out if you apply for services and were denied. And this is like if this is your first application for services.
Oh, got you. Okay. So once you're in services,
you're kind of on your own.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I reached out to Legal Aid and they were just like, well, we don't know why you're being sent here. We don't have anybody who deals with administrative court hearing. You know, they did say, okay, well, have you tried the Bar Association of Oregon, you know, the Modest Means Program? And I did try that. And they did give me a lawyer's name who's supposed to, you know, deal with administrative court hearing. And he was just like, I don't even know what IDD stands for.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And for listeners, IDD stands for Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities.
Well, it's not just the administrative court hearing. So I had also reached out to a lawyer out there in Redmond who deals with SSI, you know, people trying to get their SSI for the very first time. And he was telling me that SSI is so overly complicated with so many rules and regulations. And he didn't have any advice for me either around the administration.
Oh my goodness. That's kind of leading us into kind of looking at the broader picture of other agencies and parts of the system that are inaccessible. But before we move there, I just want to make sure, is there anything more you want to talk about the exceptions request or the administrative court that you think it would be good to for listeners to know, to be aware of how to jump through those hoops?
Honestly, we did try and reach out to the state. We tried to reach out to the director, Dana Hiddle, and Shayla's Cronenberg about how difficult it is to go through an exceptions process.
And can you tell the listeners who those people are, what their roles are?
Dana Hiddle is the overall director of IDD services for DHS. And Shayla's Cronenberg is an administrative staff for IDD services.
So you reached out to them, and what was their response?
Well, their response was, we are aware that the system is complicated and overly complicated for no good reason. You know, I mean, they were pretty much like agreeing with everything we had to say when we were talking about my PA should be at the very least be able to, my personal agent should be at the very least be able to represent me. This is something I run into with other systems as well. We're aware how complicated it is, but, you know, arguing about the complications and the problems within the system for like maybe 14 years now with the systems, if they have changed, they have changed very, very little. You know, after a while, you kind of get tired of having to repeat yourself each and every time, especially for 14 years, nothing changes.
Yeah. So you started your advocacy work about 14 years ago. What kind of got you into advocacy?
Oh, well, I guess that was the realization that even though we got services, services are not a guarantee. I think everybody expects that, you know, if you have your Social Security, you're going to hold on to it for the rest of your life. I wouldn't count on it. If you have SSI or SSD or aging and disability or brokerage services, it's not a guarantee that you're going to be able to have those services throughout the remainder of your life. This is something I think everybody has to wake up to, especially with the present administration cutting Medicaid. It's just a matter of time. I mean, they're talking about also cutting food stamps.
Right.
And then it's just a matter of time before they go after something like housing, like Home Forward that we have here in Portland, any of the Social Security programs, eventually they're going to go after those.
Yeah.
I think anybody who's retired right now should be a little bit worried and a little bit like, okay, how am I going to hold on to this? And, you know, I was kind of made aware of that like 14 years ago. And that's why I've been fighting ever since, is to just hold on to what's just barely able to make me survive. Not thrive in any way, just survive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're the title of what you chose this program to be about, disability justice and everyday pursuit in survival. Yeah, and a major part of that is just being able to maintain the services that you have. And then within that, you're doing this exceptions request because you've seen that the services that are provided aren't fully expanded to the whole person. There's a piece of you that isn't being served. And so you did this exceptions request to serve the whole person of who you are. So the fight continues. Yeah, you've been battling for 14 years for basic supports.
Well, that's just it. So what I've been battling around is something that's not like on, we call our needs assessment, the ONA, the Oregon Needs Assessment. And the problem that I have is that it doesn't show up on the ONA in any way, shape, or form until it becomes a criminalized problem or a severe problem that is unacceptable by society. And then at that point, then they start investing in like, okay, how do we modify this behavior? But it's sort of like, well, hello, you should have had it in the owner in the first place and not wait until it becomes a problem. If you wait until it becomes a problem, then all it does is it winds up putting people in jail, costing the state far more money, state and federal government, far more money than if they just put it in the owner in the first place. It's a basic human need.
Yeah.
And they really don't put social sexual down in the owner in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, there's no assessment of how someone's doing in that area. And it is a basic need.
The basic need for social sexual is a basic human need, but people with disabilities, people with physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities, emotional disabilities, are not treated as human beings. That's why my race is non-human.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the state and federal government, I am not treated as a human being in any way, shape, or form. They just do not see my humanity. They don't think I have any value. I'm a burden to society on something I never had a choice on.
Yeah, when I've been in, gone into talk with Congress people with you, well, when we were doing on Zoom during the pandemic, you had your pronouns, it and your race, non-human, underneath your name. And then you talked a little bit about that sometimes to some Congress people. And it was a really powerful moment for them to realize that that's how a lot of people feel. I think it's been a helpful advocacy moment to have that definition that you've decided to claim so that people are aware that this is how the system makes people feel.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the multiple systems.
Right.
It is also like capitalism.
Mm.
Let's face it, capitalism is a system of profit over everything. That includes profit over destroying the environment. Let's talk about the healthcare system. Do they really cure things or do they just treat things because it's more profitable to make money from treating people rather than curing them?
Mm, right.
And then, like, you know, we wind up with this opioid addiction, the antibodies not working so well. I mean, I think this is also tied into like all the food stuff that they feed us, all that
processed food. Yeah. So many people are we have high rates of diabetes because of processed foods and the sugars. Another piece about the healthcare system is how they parcel us out into pieces, go to this specialist and that specialist, and there's no communication between those specialists so that nobody's really looking at the whole person unless you have a really good primary care physician. They're supposed to look at the whole person, but we get parceled out. That is not a whole person view at all. Another aspect of the healthcare that you have found inaccessible is OHP doesn't cover everything.
Yeah, they cover what they call the 500 line items. And I'm just kind of like always like really curious. So what in the world gets within these 500 line items? Certainly there's got to be a lot more diseases, conditions, abnormalities, ailments, and other things like that, that it's got to be a lot more than 500.
Is there any other system you want to discuss that is inaccessible?
Well, honestly, to tell you the truth, they're all inaccessible. But I would say that SSI is really very difficult to deal with because it does command so much of our lives when you've got a disability. You know, you can't get married without getting a penalty. Because, you know, if you get married, well, then they will either half your income, so take away half your income, or they'll take it away all, depending on the spouse you marry. And it's
how much the spouse is earning? Is that what it's based on, the spouse's income? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just unreasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's penalizing us for wanting to love somebody else.
Yeah, it's definitely discriminatory. People are choosing not to get married so that they can hold on to the, what is it, 900 something a month. I mean, I can't imagine going less than 900.
Well, that's just it. It's 967 a month. That's not even making basic rent here in Portland. I mean, when our basic rent is like $1,400 and they're only giving you 960 a month, that's not covering rent in any way, shape, or form. And then let's talk about the price of food going up.
Yeah.
And all those tariffs kind of interfering with that.
Right. I mean,
you know, our bills, our utilities, our rent, the cost of food, travel, all that goes up. But our income is not in any way, shape, or form matching how quickly that inflation is occurring.
Yeah, yeah.
Which leaves us in this really brutal poverty.
Right.
Because then if you do wind up, like you were saying earlier, you know, if you do wind up with only a medical issue and they only cover 500 line items, well, how in the world do you ever save up enough money to deal with your medical issue?
Right.
Or let's say you need a wheelchair. How do you in the world do you ever save up enough money to get a wheelchair or get repairs on that wheelchair? Or when your companion animal is having problems, taking them to the vet, you know?
Right, right.
It's out of reach. So it's like, we're going to give you an amount of money, but we're going to give you an amount of money to punish you with. Mm. Not to help you with, but to punish you with. Because, you know, we don't want to cover the cost of rent. We don't want to cover veterinary or food or utilities or any of this other stuff that you're going to need to survive.
Yeah, we have a big fight on our hands to the SNAP benefits. I just can't imagine what the disability community is going to do without SNAP benefits. Yeah, we've got some more battles ahead. It's not like one battle, it's lots of battles.
Well, that's just it. This is such a big puzzle, and there are just so many pieces. And even if you have minor success with this piece, well, it's still depending on that piece and that piece and this piece and that piece and that piece over there. I mean, it's just so big.
Yeah.
Anytime anybody looks at it, I mean, even from a state level, just looking at it from a state level, it's daunting, it's overwhelming, it's oppressive, it's like, how in the world do we ever achieve any of this? And then on top of that, the state is going to say, well, no, this is not our preview. You got to go talk to the federal government. And man, once we get in there, oh, that's even huger, bigger, nastier, more unable to access. I mean, you know, the federal government's in Washington, D.C. I live here in Portland, Oregon. I don't really see, like, you know, because of my low income, I don't see a free train or a free hotel going into Washington, D.C. So that I can go down there and get on the state of the Capitol and say, hey, I really need this changed, you know. I need my SSI so that it covers my expenses. I need the marriage penalty removed. I need that $2,000 asset limit that you all set back like 50 years ago or something like that, maybe 40 years ago. I'm not exactly certain. But, you know, I need that removed so that I can do what you guys have been asking me to do, which is
the big job. Yeah, you need to be able to save, and $2,000 is that's not enough. Before we close out, I think it would be really important for listeners to hear about some ways of trying to fight things to get your voice out there. And I did look up a really good way to find out who your legislators are. There's a website called 270, so the number 70 TO to win, because that's how many it takes for somebody to win the presidency. But this 270towin.com website, you can plug in your address, and what it does is give you your federal senators, your two senators, and your representative, your congressperson, and how to contact them. And then it also will go into showing you who your Oregon state legislators are. So that's a good way for people to go and find out who to talk to. But once they know who to talk to, what do you recommend they say, John?
Honestly, from what I've heard over and over again from representatives and senators, is just talk about your personal story. Make it as human as possible, yeah, and as relatable as possible. Mm. You know, if you can make it human and relatable to the representative and senator that you're talking to, they're going to much better, listen and take it to heart and hopefully do something about it. Also, you might want to keep your story underneath 2 minutes. It's been proven over and over again. Once you get past 2 minutes, people kind of lose interest. So don't be too long. Tell your story. Just make it short, not too short, but don't go over 2 minutes.
Fantastic. Great advice, John.
And one other thing I'd like to say, Dina, you know, I know that you said you have done this, which is, you know, here in Oregon, we can pretty much count on our representatives voting the way we want them to. At least within, the Portland area, because, you know, we're all pretty progressive.
Yeah.
But you can also try, like, if you have cousins or uncles and aunts or relatives in other states, friends in other states, reaching out to them and telling them about your hardships and about how if they cut this certain program, it's going to make you life even harder for you.
Yeah. That is something I've done, is I've talked to my relatives who live in states that where more of a push is needed to get the word out. So encouraging families and family and friend in other places to call and tell them how to get on to 270towin.com. It is a non-biased or unbiased website, so it isn't trying to influence you in any way. What it's trying to get is people to do their civic duty and become voters and to be interactive with their legislators. So, yeah, I encourage you all to follow John's modeling of how to get out there and get your voice heard. John, thank you so much for willing to talk to your listeners today and let them hear a little bit about what's brought you to this work.
Yeah, and if I sound overly anxious or angry or frustrated, it's because I've got a lot of passion around advocacy, and it's just really hard work that, you know, advocates don't get paid to do this. I went in and was talking to my therapist about this, and she said, you have a full-time job without any pay or any benefits.
Yeah, so, it's so true.
But don't just rely on the advocates. We need everybody's help if we're going to make any change, you know, just like take 5-10 minutes out of your really busy lives and just put in, you know, your 2 cents worth, because we really need everybody, all hands on deck for this.
We do. Thank you, John. Thank you for your work.
Yeah, thank you for interviewing me, Dina.
You're welcome.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kboo.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice at kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.
To KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public